Welcome into an NBA Finals Week edition of Armchair Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Thank you all for joining me on this very special episode. Got a lot to talk about. I want to start out by giving a quick shout out to the band Liebecker, who provides music for the show. We're very grateful for what they do for us and hope you have checked them out. And if you haven't, please do so at www.liebeckermusic.com. Great band from the Great Northwest. Just three guys trying to make a living, making music for all their fans. So please give them a listen. On the show with us tonight is fellow Oregon Sports News alum Bryant Knox, who is here from the very, very far distant city of Portland, Oregon. So Bryant, want to bring you on and say welcome to the show and thank you for being here. We always enjoy having fellow OSN alums on the show, so thank you for being here.
Casey, thank you for having me. I don't know if people have heard of this land of Portland, but that is where I hail from. There's rain and bridges, and I love it, and I have a feeling a lot of your listeners love it too. So I'm happy to be here with you and, you know, reaching out to the good folks of Portland and the state of Oregon and all of the OSN readers.
Absolutely. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Bryant's work, and if you're not, shame on you, but he's a contributing columnist and the feedback editor for Oregon Sports News. So if you haven't checked out his work, please do so. You can see my work, his work, everybody's work at www.oregonsportsnews.com. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Bryant's probably a better follow because he says things that make sense, whereas I just make some stuff up. So if you're listening to this, we'll get you our Twitter handles on there. Bryant, I don't know what yours is, but go ahead with it if you've got it offhand.
It's at Bryant Knox. That's Bryant as in Kobe. Oh, gosh, I don't know any famous Knox. Who's the most famous Knox? Maybe Amanda Knox at this point?
How about Fort Knox?
I don't want to necessarily be related with, but yes, at Brent Knox was the most creative thing I could come up with. So find me, and if you do find me, let me know if you have any more creative handle ideas. I'm open to them.
Anything that's not your first and last name is pretty much what the idea has to be.
Yeah, I thought about throwing the first, middle, and last name. Never thought, no, let's get crazy. Let's get rid of the middle name. So that is as creative and as far as I got in that process.
That's still more creative than me. I'm at Oregon Sports Guy, so it's about as generic as it gets. All you can tell from my handle is that I'm from Oregon and I enjoy sports. I'm a dude, so at least you've got some specifics in yours.
Yeah, I got the specifics, but I feel like yours is one step above mine. Maybe mine should just be not Amanda Knox.
That could work, you know. I don't know if you'll lose some followers doing that, but who knows? You know, maybe she's giving you some followers because they don't know that you're not related.
Maybe. I'll have to look into the analytics there.
So let's get on to the main event and talk about the most recent NBA Finals game played on Wednesday night, Game 3. What was your instant reaction to that? The Cavaliers came in down 2-0. They needed to win on their home turf to get back in the series. They ended up losing. It was a really well-played game, but LeBron only rested 2 minutes out of all 48. He looked exhausted. His game has suffered in the second half all three games, but it definitely looked like it suffered a little bit more on this one because he was just trying to do a little too much. What did you see from that game that you liked, disliked? What was your instant reaction?
Well, for starters, I think LeBron has been fantastic the entire postseason. You know, I know that you can't judge the regular season MVP votes on the postseason, but it is a shame that LeBron is not going to be one of the finalists on the NBA award show. I know that we all, as NBA fans and analysts, fall into this trap that there's a trap that says if he deserves it every year, you can't give it to him every year.
Right.
And to an extent, I agree with that. But I also think it's kind of a sham that we judge guys based on their own past greatness and not sort of in a vacuum within one season in and of itself. But as far as this postseason goes and these finals goes, I love what LeBron's doing. You know, I love the fact that he has been all over the stat sheet, but they aren't they are potato chip stats, right? They're not all calories and no sustenance. They are doing things for himself and his team and his teammates. What I really loved about game three, finally got help from Kyrie Irving. Now, right. The problem was that Kyrie Irving put up an offer. He went over 7 from the three-point line. But the fact that he specifically got help from Kyrie in scoring role was huge, because that's what everyone was saying the Cavaliers needed. The Cavaliers needed not just, you know, Kevin Love to put up decent points and rebounds. They needed a guy like a Kyrie Irving to come in and play that true supporting role with LeBron James. Unfortunately, the reality is that the Cavaliers got what they needed, and they still lost a close game, which is just demoralizing if you're the Cavaliers. Because if you were asking for Kyrie Irving to step up, and he finally did, and you still lose a close game on a Kevin Durant dagger and an 11-0 run in the final 3 minutes to close the game, that is a bummer if you are the Cavaliers, because that gives you little to no hope moving forward.
Well, let's talk about the end of the game really quick. I looked up the numbers today, and Kyle Korver is the number 7. He's number 7 in the top 10 of the best NBA three-point shooters of all time, and that's by shooting average in the regular season during a career. His numbers have dipped in the postseason throughout his career, but over his career, he's number 7 all time in three-point shooting. Do you fault LeBron for throwing the ball over to Korver in the corner, where he's one of the best in the business, with the game on the line, or would you rather see LeBron take that shot?
I do not fault LeBron one bit. In fact, to be honest, anybody who does fault LeBron for passing that ball right there to Kyle Korver, as you pointed out, one of the most prolific three-point shooters in NBA history, anybody who faults LeBron for that is stuck in 2005.
Right.
Because that used to be the critique on LeBron, which was that he was passive. You know, we always gave him credit for being a master when it came to passing the ball. There were always the Magic Johnson comparisons. He had a commercial with Bernie Mac. I don't know if you've seen it, for Nike, of the crazy court vision. If you haven't seen it, look up LeBron James' crazy court vision on YouTube. It's fantastic. The problem was, we all gave him credit for the skill that he had, but in the final moments of a game, we wanted him to change his mentality.
Right.
And I was guilty of it. Many analysts were guilty of it. He would make the exact same pass we saw to Kyle Korver in game 3, and we would bury him for the fact that he didn't want to be Michael Jordan. He didn't want to shoot it. Well, then, as LeBron's career progressed, you know, he hit the big shot in the playoffs against Orlando. He had the multiple drives in the playoffs in the closing moments against Washington. We started to realize he did develop this killer mentality, and we all appreciated that for him. Well, then, as he started to find a middle ground, we started to realize, okay, he knows how to make the right play, whether it be driving to the basket, pulling up for the jumper, or finding the open shooter. And Kyle Korver should not have taken that shot, because LeBron should have not passed to him. You're stuck in LeBron early days. Even Michael Jordan passed to Steve Kerr to hit one of the biggest shots of 1990s NBA Finals history. So, no, I do not blame LeBron for that one bit. Even if it hadn't been Kyle Korver, even if it had been Richard Jefferson, Darren Williams, these are guys who do not necessarily deserve that shot in that moment. But if they were wide open and LeBron knows their history and knows in the moment that they're the right guy to shoot the ball, I don't blame LeBron one bit.
Well, and Korver has been training to take that shot his entire career. That's what his whole career has been building up to. So I don't fault LeBron in that area at all. I don't even really fault Kyle Korver. Go ahead.
There is why the Cavaliers brought Kyle Korver on board.
Right. Well, and if that shot goes in, they're saying, what a brilliant pass in the moment while he's getting triple teamed to find an open man in the corner where even the defense hadn't found a guy. And that's the thing that kind of scares me a little bit about today's, you know, instant reaction media, is that everyone looks at the play and goes, well, it didn't work, so it was stupid. And I look at it and go, 9 times out of 10, that shot's probably going in. You know, if Kevin Durant had missed his dagger 3, a lot of people probably would have said, why are you taking that shot with a man right in your face? Why aren't you passing the ball? It's always what you should have done, not what you did do. And I think that's where LeBron unfortunately and unfairly gets thrown into this gauntlet of all this social media thrown at him, which Jordan didn't have to deal with and Magic didn't have to deal with. And, you know, thank God Barkley didn't have to deal with. But it's a real thing that it's a beast. It's its own animal that judges you for things that if they work, you're a genius. And if they don't work, you're the biggest loser in the history of the game. And shame on you for even showing up.
It's absolutely a real thing. I mean, you know, back in the day, a hot take was the next morning's paper.
Right.
And that changed drastically because at this point, the next day is when the cool takes pop up.
Right.
And that's when people have a chance to analyze the situation. Not to say cooler heads always prevail the next morning, but it's a situation nowadays where hot takes can happen immediately in real time, and they oftentimes do, which leads to unfair criticism, which in my opinion is accurate as of right now. Anybody who's blaming LeBron for making that pass is saying that you're stuck in early LeBron mentality and that you're basically conceding to the idea that social media calls for hot takes.
Yeah, we can't say that he's one of the best pure passers the league's ever seen and then also fault him for being a pure passer. You have to either celebrate it and appreciate it or you move on. And it seems like a lot of people have moved on because they want to see a guy like Jordan. But the weird thing is that those same people that praised Jordan also during his career were calling him a ball hog and that he needed to pass the ball more. So I think what we've learned in all of this in the last 20, 30 years is that you can't please everyone. So LeBron should just do what he thinks is right for his team and for the moment. And he's done this professional basketball gig longer than any of us talking about it have. So I think that I trust him to think he knows if he sees an open man in the corner that he's going to pass it to him. And just so you know, LeBron actually echoed our sentiments and said that if he could have that play over again and he sees one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the game open in the corner, he'll pass to him every time. And I think the greats of the game would back him up on that.
And one of the things that I love about LeBron's comment there, because you're correct, he did say he would do it again because he knew who he had on his side, but he also recognized it wasn't just my teammate who missed the shot. He said, there was a play beforehand where I had a turnaround, where I make it every single day in practice. I make it every single game, but I miss that particular shot. So he recognized that it's not just missed the shot. It's not just my pass to get him involved. He said, I missed shots as well. This
right.
was a collective effort, which, you know, LeBron has become, you know, one of the most, I hate to say well-spoken because he's always been well-spoken, and that's not really the sentiment I'm trying to offer here, but he's become one of these guys who you can listen to, and he knows his basketball.
Right.
Whereas with so many other stars and non-stars and anybody in between, you get cliche basketball athlete talk. With LeBron, you get actual analysis, even in the immediate postgame. I mean, I don't know if you saw, but he was talking about the play where Kevin Durant came down and drilled the three-pointer over him. Most people would say, oh, Kevin Durant, he's a great player. He makes that shot all the time. You know, what are you going to do? LeBron very specifically said Kevin Durant leans forward in his three-point shots. He said whether it's early game or late game, he leans forward. And he said the last thing I want to do is step into a shooter and foul him. We see you, Zaza. We know that you don't think that
right.
on the court. But LeBron James not only does he think of that in the moment, but then he portrays it afterwards, you know, in his own analysis. So he is constantly thinking about the way that the game plays out, which I don't think many people in today's game do. So he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, and just to go right back to that really quick, his memory recall and his play recall is just phenomenal. And while he may have had some moments early in his career where he was relying too much on athletic ability, you can tell that as he's gotten older and wiser, he's used that veteran savvy to his advantage and to his teammates' advantage. And he knows that he's not 24 anymore. He can't go sprinting up and down the court for 48 minutes anymore. We know that. And nobody can. Once you hit age 30, your body starts to wear down a little bit, especially when you've been sprinting your whole life. So I think that he's gotten very smart, and he's still doing all those things, but he's being so savvy in how he describes it.
He is still putting somebody on a poster every week.
Yep.
Like, that's what makes him unreal, because you're correct. You know, he has lost somewhere between half a step and a step. That's undeniable. And in doing so, he's gotten smarter, he's gotten wiser, he's gotten more savvy with his game, because he's always had that. He just needed to truly channel it. For the NBA is that he hasn't really lost that athleticism yet. And it boggles my mind that we're probably still going to have that LeBron for the next two, maybe three seasons. And then after that, if he legitimately wants to play another 5-6 years after that, he'll have the savvy and the all-around game to make it work. I'm not trying to start a debate here on how long is LeBron going to play. Feel free to reel this back in. But LeBron could basically play as long as he wants to play. I'm convinced of that.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a lot like Kobe's career and Michael Jordan's career, where it depends on how much starting time do they really have left. You know, a lot of guys like Grant Hill can be a reserve and even start here and there later in their career. But I think LeBron's one of those guys that once he feels that he's a step or two behind the youngest guys in the league in their prime, I think that's probably when he'll step away and realize that it's probably in his best interest to embrace his legacy for what it is and not keep pushing for something that he doesn't need. And I wish that Jordan had done that, because I think the last couple of years Jordan was playing, no one wants to remember anymore. They kind of have blacked out his Wizards time. And same with Kobe, his last couple of years, where he was just injured all the time, and then when he was injured, he was chucking up ridiculous shots, and it's just, that's not the part of your career you want to remember. I wish that they would have retired a couple years earlier. So I hope that if LeBron gets to that point where he knows that he's lost a step or two, he knows he's not a real starter in this league anymore, that he'll just hang him up and not taint his legacy a little bit.
Yeah, like I said, I think LeBron can find a way to play as long as he wants to play. I think you're correct, though. That will come down to how long does he want to play. By the way, fun fact, LeBron James is 32 years old. His eldest son, who's already making the rounds in the AAU circuit, as far as his name is concerned, and, you know, I think I remember has a verbal scholarship from someone at this point, is 12 years old, meaning LeBron James Jr. is basically 7 years away from potentially making his NBA debut.
That'd be neat.
7 years from now, LeBron will be 39. It's not unrealistic to think that we could have either one NBA season where LeBron James and LeBron James Jr. play in the same league, or potentially LeBron Senior at that point. LeBron James Senior retires, and then we have one NBA season with no LeBron James before Junior joins, which is pretty wild to think about.
That's insane. Yeah, that's really wild. I hope that happens.
Personally, I'm just gonna check myself into a retirement home when LeBron James retires, because I won't know what else to do at that point. I'll just feel odd. If we legitimately have a maximum of 1 year without a LeBron James in the NBA, maybe I'll be okay. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that's how a lot of people felt when MJ hung him up, and we'll see if LeBron has the same impact, where the league just won't feel the same. It'll take a couple of years for you to realize that there's other guys out there, and there's a changing of the guard, and there's a passing of the torch, and we'll see who that goes to. You know, right now, Durant's going to be too old for that, and so is Curry, and so are some of these other guys that are up-and-comers in the league. They're all going to be in their early 30s to mid-30s by then, so we'll kind of see who gets the torch when LeBron hangs them up, but it'd be really neat if it's his own son.
I mean, it would be a story unlike any other. I mean, one of my favorite baseball highlights of all time, I have to admit I was too young to appreciate it when it happened, but Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. hitting back-to-back home runs.
One of the coolest moments in the history of sports.
That's it, right? I don't put LeBron James and LeBron James Sr. playing either side-by-side or against each other, or 1 year apart from each other on that level, but it makes me think of it. It's very comparable. And I think as far as narratives go, the fact that the James name is going to dominate the NBA from 2003 until, I don't know, 2000 whatever is pretty wild to think about.
Really wild. We'll have to cover that. Go ahead.
You mentioned Kevin Durant. I'm curious what your opinion is of his finals performance, because I mean we've gone off on this LeBron James tangent, you know, justifiably so. I think I may have even started it, but I am curious what you think about Kevin Durant and the way he's performed in these finals, with all of the criticism and all the pressure put on him entering this series.
I think he looks comfortable for the first time in a long time. I think he, in my opinion, is the runaway with the Finals MVP award. I don't know how you give it to anybody else. I mean, Steph Curry's had some good games, and Klay Thompson had some good games, and more specifically, big moments. And Draymond Green has been incredible on defense. So have a lot of guys on the on the Warriors. But if you're talking about the one guy who's been the most valuable to any team in the finals this far, I don't know how you don't give it to Kevin Durant. I mean, the guy has just been clutch as you can get. He really was having a really quiet game three until the fourth quarter, and then he basically helped that 11-0 run happen. He actually made it happen. His length, his size, his power, his finesse, his outside shooting, his inside shooting, his dunking ability. I mean, the guy is the all-around package that this team was missing when competing against LeBron, and now he's their trump card. He can be the guy that does everything they need. When they go small, he can play center. When they go big, he can play small forward or power forward. He can run point. He does everything. And the fact that they have Steph Curry.
Yeah, in game two, Kevin Durant was the best center on the floor.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure we've ever said that before about him. Meaning he was tossed into a new role in a, you know, it's not a new system at this point. He's been with the Warriors for an entire season. They gelled very, very quickly. I'm not sure anybody really expected anything different, so you can't say it's a new system necessarily. But he was tossed into a role in a small ball game where he was legitimately not only playing center, but became the best center. And I think that's pretty unreal when it comes to a player of his skill set and of that roster makeup to be tossed into a role and thrive in an NBA Finals series.
Yeah, and to make some of the superstars around him look, I don't want to say second rate, but that's kind of how he's making it look. I mean, he's looking like he's head and shoulders above the rest of the field, and that's insane because you've got Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love. I mean, this is like an all-star game that we're watching, you know, up to seven times in a row. And Kevin Durant is looking like the superstar and a man among boys. And I didn't expect that coming into this. I knew that he'd be really good with Golden State, but I didn't expect him to be just blowing people out of the water.
Well, and you know, you mentioned all those other players. You mentioned that to you, Kevin Durant is your runaway finals MVP. He is mine as well, and I think he is the runaway MVP for most people who have watched and analyzed these finals. But here's what makes it even more ridiculous. He is the runaway MVP while Stephen Curry is averaging, for the series, 28.7 points, 9.7 rebounds, 9 assists, shooting 48.4% from the three-point line on 10.3 three-pointers per game, right? That right there is not only finals MVP worthy, that is all-time great finals. Kevin Durant is running away with this MVP. I think that in game three, you know, LeBron and Kyrie Irving were probably the two best players on the court, if we want to give them that credit for what they did. But Kevin Durant not only had probably the next best line, maybe even behind Stephen Curry, but from a context standpoint, from a contextual standpoint, Kevin Durant had the biggest play of the game, the top three or four lines of the game. I mean, what he's doing is not only unreal in a basketball statistical standpoint, but like I said, he had so much pressure coming into this series. He had to live up to it. If he had flopped, or if the Warriors had flopped, you know, you thought it was bad when everyone was making memes about blowing a 3-1 lead. It would have been 10 times worse, whatever came in this hot take world that we've already talked about, where Kevin Durant joins the best team in the NBA and then flops in the finals. It would have absolutely been him from the Warriors, but they have made that a moot point because Durant has done everything he's needed to do and the Warriors have been great.
He has, and I'll be absolutely shocked if he doesn't win the MVP. I think at this point someone would have to just destroy everything from here on out, and he'd have to just take a nap the rest of the way for him to not win. So let's move on to another topic that I've brought up a couple times. I'm curious what your take is on it, and I think you know what I'm going to talk about. I'm curious. You've watched all three games, and you've watched Steph Curry throughout his career. Which is more annoying to you to watch? Is it watching LeBron pass the ball to role players in clutch moments, or is it Steph Curry chomping on his mouth guard in between plays to no end, and it just drives me crazy. I'm sick of it. I want it to stop. It's ruining high definition for me. What's your take on that?
I'm just glad he hasn't thrown it at anybody this year.
It's getting there.
Last year when he got... It might be, but I know that last year he made headlines when if I remember correctly, he fouled out, but he also was ejected when he threw the mouth guard.
Yep.
And he hit something like the owner's son or something like that, the Cavaliers. He hasn't done that this time around, so, you know, Draymond Green talked recently about how he knew he went over the edge last year and he's kind of toned it back. You know, I don't know if Steph had to necessarily have that monologue like Draymond did, but at least he
should.
Done that. That said, if I never see the mouth guard again, it'll be too soon. I don't need to see it at this point.
I've taken a mental poll of all the times he's doing it and then watching other guys in between plays to see if it's just more common and I'm just zeroing in on him. But honestly, I can't find one other player that does this on a regular basis. So I'm going to get my stats together and forward them to Adam Silver with just a plea to please make it stop. That this is high-definition broadcast. It's not the 1980s where you could barely see what was going on. I can see it, and it's perfectly clear, and I don't want to watch it anymore.
Casey, you're not a Kobe fan, are you, by chance?
I'm not, but I should say I'm not a Kobe fan, but I'm a very big fan of his career and what he brought to the game. But as far as like him being a player, I'm not a fan just because that would seriously hurt the Blazer fan in me. But I greatly respect what he brought to the league during his time there.
I'm with you there. I'm curious what you found more obnoxious, Curry chomping on the mouth guard or Kobe's scowl. Yeah, when it was like a layup in the second quarter, I felt like Kobe had that Kobe face during non-points of games, and that used to get on my nerves. I know that he used to always like actually lick his lips.
Yep.
And make this sort of chomping motion. To me, that was more obnoxious because it came at non-consequential times of the game.
Right.
As a fellow non-Kobe fan, I'm curious if that ever got on your nerves the same way that Steph's get on your nerves.
It did, and I guess it probably bothered me more because when I was watching him, he was consistently beating the team I wanted to win. So it was not just annoying, but it was also it would get your blood boiling because he's not only beating you, but he's almost laughing in your face when he does that. That scowl of his. And then Steph Curry's got kind of the same thing. He's got this kind of sideways smirk he does while he's chewing on the mouth guard. And he always seems to find things funny or like laughable, like he's above it or something. And it's just, it's irritating to me more because it's in the moment right now. I'm sure when I look back when I'm older that I won't care at all. And I'll kind of wonder why I bothered to bring it up. But right now here today, it's bugging me.
Well, the transformation of Curry has been really, really interesting to watch. He has gone from the baby-faced assassin,
who
was an underdog, undersized player with bad ankles and an NBA celebrity father, to a player who was a legitimate all-star and a borderline superstar, to an NBA champion that everyone embraced. Basically, the very next year, he turned into a cocky son of a gun that yep. nobody enjoyed watching thrive anymore. And you know, and that was really the time where his antics on the court became more of a topic. His celebrating, you know, Klay Thompson jumpers before they even went in and he ran down the court. The shooting from the sideline and turning around and looking at the Sacramento Kings bench before it even goes in, and then kind of jumping off to the other end and knowing the result before it even happens. Those types of things started to make the rounds on social media after he became a champion, but I kind of wonder if those antics were around even before and nobody really noticed it. And where I'm really getting at here is I wonder if he was chomping on that mouth guard in 2010 and nobody really noticed, or I guess what year was he drafted? 2011? Whatever year he was drafted, I wonder if he was doing these things that was nervous. He was drafted 2009. I wonder if he was doing these things back in the day, but now because of the popularity and, you know, the fact that he is on a quote-unquote super team or a villain team, I wonder if becoming new habits based on his new cocky agenda.
It absolutely could be the case. I'd have to go back and watch film. I know there was that, 2010 or 2011 series against San Antonio where that was kind of his coming out party, where we kind of realized this guy is a legit superstar in this league if he can stay healthy. And I do wonder if that's when he started wearing the mouth guard, because he was getting pushed around a lot more because he was a target, whereas before he was kind of flying under the radar. He was a neat thing, kind of like Jeremy Lin for a year, but people didn't expect it to last, and instead of not only lasting, he turned it into this whole other level, and now he's his own brand. He's the face of the franchise. He's one of the two faces of the NBA, and I think that's definitely gone to his head a little bit, and unfortunately it's gone to more mouth guard chomping, and he takes a lot of nasty spills, but a lot of them are not to the head, so I kind of wish he would stop wearing it or just figure out how to keep it in his mouth.
I mean, I guess if the thing you're worst known for during your cockiness is a mouth guard chomp.
Right.
I guess you're probably doing okay.
He's
not turning into Dennis Rodman or to an extent even, you know, peak cocky Draymond Green.
Right. I will say that I'll take Curry chomping his mouth guard over Draymond Green running his mouth every 2 seconds. So you've got me there that if I got to make a choice between the two, I'd rather have a classy sharpshooter who does do some arrogant things, but overall he's a very classy individual. I just wish he would keep his mouth guarding because it's kind of disgusting. So,
Casey, what's your prediction for game four?
Game four, I really think Cleveland will get this one done because, A, I think they really need this. They don't want to get swept, and they know that if they play their hearts out, they've got a shot to win this one and to push it to 6 or 7 games, which I don't know how realistic that is because it's been something like 20 years since the last time a team went down 3-0 in the finals and pushed to 7 games. I believe it was 96 against when the Bulls had it happen to them against the Sonics, and then they closed the Sonics out in game six. And it's been 60 some odd years since it's happened in the finals. And this is pre-mergers, like 1951, Rochester was able to pull it off. So I don't expect them to push it to 7 games or even 6 games, but I do think it'll at least get to 5. I think Cleveland will take care of business for one night. And then they'll go back to Oracle on, I think it's either Sunday or Monday. And that's when Golden State will finish the job. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. My prediction actually from the very beginning has honestly been more narrative-based than basketball-based. I have felt from the very beginning that Golden State is going to come out, play fantastic basketball, and win 3 straight games. In game four, a desperate Cavaliers squad is going to come away with a tight victory. It won't be convincing by any means. It won't be perfect, but it will be a victory nonetheless. And at that moment, that's when the narrative kicks in, because the entire hot take social media world is going to talk about how the super team Golden State Warriors are about to be the first team to ever blow a 3-0 lead after being the first team to ever blow a 3-1 lead in the finals.
Right.
Unfortunately for the social media world, I fully believe that Golden State goes back to Oracle, wins Game 5, finally gets that trophy presentation in front of its home crowd that it didn't get 2 years ago when they won in Cleveland, and certainly didn't get last year when the Cavaliers won on the road. I think that it all comes together. The stars align. It's the perfect end to the trilogy, the perfect end to the rubber match, and I think that the Warriors get it done in 5.
And I definitely would rather they go back to Oracle for Game 5 at least, because the last thing I want out of all of this is for LeBron to have lost 3 finals in Cleveland and only won one, and the one he won was on the home, was on the away court, and the 3 he lost were on the home court. That'd be just devastating.
I agree. I know that you didn't say this, but I know that a lot of people are running with that devastating theme and talking about how this is devastating to LeBron James' legacy as a whole. I completely get that his finals winning percentage doesn't touch Michael Jordan's. I get that. I appreciate that. And I respect Michael Jordan for what he did do, for what LeBron has not been able to do. But I personally, and again, I know this isn't quite where you were taking this, but I'm just running with, again, the social media hot take world and their reaction. I don't believe that this series, whether LeBron loses in 4 or 5, or 6, I do not think that this impacts his legacy in a negative way. I certainly don't think it boosts his legacy. I think that he has done a fantastic job of carrying the Cavaliers during this series. And if we're being completely honest, by looking at MVP as the legitimate most valuable player, he is probably the most valuable player on the court, because in the 19 minutes that he has not played in the finals, the Cavaliers' net rating is a negative 45.3.
Yep.
Completely unheard of. So I think that he does deserve at least, you know, if he's not going to win the MVP. That's not an option this year like it was 2 years ago when the Cavs lost, but I do think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's doing. I do not think that his legacy is tarnished by this one bit necessarily. Legacy.
Yeah, and I talked about that a little bit on last week's episode, that for me, he's a top 5 player all time, no matter what he does from here on out. What he's done in the first 13, 14 seasons he's played in the NBA is very rare, and we need to celebrate that and stop putting him up against guys like Jordan or Abdul-Jabbar or Wilt Chamberlain or Bill Russell. I mean, you can keep going down and down the list, Magic and Bird. I mean, he's his own guy. I don't know why we need to keep comparing him to these other amazing greats of the game. Let's just say he's a top 5, top 10 all-time player, and let that be that. That if he had swept Golden State in this series, it wouldn't have made him number 1, in my opinion. And just like if he gets swept out of this series, it's not going to make him number 11, in my opinion. He's still going to be a top 5, top 10, maybe even an argument for top 2 or 3 players of all time. I don't think this series changes that.
Yeah, I think that too many people try to make that historical comparison, which is very topical right now, because just earlier today, Rasheed Wallace came out and said that the 2004 Pistons would have beaten this current iteration of the Warriors. Magic Johnson has said that the Showtime Lakers would have swept them. Multiple people have said that the 1996 Bulls would have beaten them. It's a pointless argument. It's fun. To an extent, if you want to have it around a water cooler or at a sports bar, that's fine. If you want to truly argue numbers, you had better have some sort of era-adjusted metric in mind, because to me, arguing players and teams of different eras, there's so much to it that you can't just make a claim and take that at face value.
You really can't, and, you know, that's why when you even compare, like, Magic and Bird, who played in the same era, there's really not a way to compare them. They were two very different players who just were great during the same time. And Jordan was, you know, a standalone player during an amazing era where he was just better than everybody else. And then now you have LeBron, who's kind of the same way during his time. So you can't really compare any of those guys. And, you know, pre-merger, you can't really go even farther back than that and say, you know, what would Bill Russell do in today's NBA? So that's where I really draw the line and say, if the rules changed or the game changed or the players changed, that's a different era. Can't compare the two. Because, you know, we can't suddenly say that you're allowed to start hand-checking the Warriors or that you're not allowed to hand-check the Bulls if they were going to play a seven-game series. There's a whole bunch of variables that go into it. And then once you get to the bottom line, it's that these are all different players. No two are alike. That, you know, Kobe and Jordan are probably the two mirror images of each other as far as two players go in the history of the game. And even they had different careers playing on star-studded rosters. So I really don't know that you can ever compare two guys from different eras, even in the same era. It's just, it's too convoluted, too many variables. It's impossible, really. Let's just appreciate what we have and what we're seeing, and that LeBron's one of the best ever to play the game, and just enjoy it while it lasts, because we're probably not going to get very many more years of it.
No. Hey, Casey, next time we get together in person, we'll have a few brews, and we'll have this conversation casually, and then we'll report back on the podcast.
Sounds good. So I got a couple lightning round questions for you. We're almost out of, we're actually over the time limit, but it's your first time on the show, so I didn't want to cut you off. So number one,
I can ramble, so I appreciate that.
No problem. I do the same, and you know, we're just talking sports. It's our passion. So if it runs long, it runs long. People can always stop it if they don't like to listen. So question number one,
overtime.
What's that?
We'll call it overtime.
Yeah, okay. So we're in
sports.
Yeah, it comes up once in a while. So, gut reaction, your first answer that comes to mind. If LeBron loses this series, is he staying in Cleveland?
Yes.
You think
he goes to his next contract, and I don't think he signs this max contract that
right.
People want him to sign when this one's done. I think that he goes back to the more 1+1 option. And, you know, I have always said that when he came back to Cleveland, he was there to win a championship, and he did it. I truly, truly believe that he wants to play with the Banana Boat crew. Chris Paul's, and maybe get Carmelo Anthony and D-Wade involved. They're many years away from that because it would take them all, you know, dropping their salary significantly to make it happen. But does he end his career in Cleveland? I'm not convinced at all.
Okay. So the second question is, if he does leave Cleveland and for some odd reason he wants to come to Portland, and they can make the deal happen for 1 year, 1 year only, but the offset is you have to trade away Damian or CJ. Are you willing to pull the trigger on that 1 year deal?
If it's CJ, there's no question about it. No offense to the guy at all, but you know, he and Damian Lillard combined clearly have their redundancies, and unfortunately those redundancies translate to their redundant defensive deficiencies as well. If it's Damian Lillard and you have to legitimately trade him away, if it happened next season, I think you do it in a heartbeat. No offense to Damian because of what he's done. You know, I hate to try to sound cool, but he's done it for the culture. He's done it for Portland. He has done it for the franchise, and he's made a name for himself. So if it's legitimately you trade Damian Lillard next season for 1 year of LeBron, I don't think you do it just because of the long-lasting effect. But if you get LeBron for multiple years or it's a couple years down the road, I mean, it's LeBron freaking James.
Right.
It's tough to justify not trading anybody in the NBA for him.
Right. That's my take, too. And, you know, honestly, if it were up to me and that deal was on the table with this roster they have right now, I would go for it and probably trade CJ, knowing I could probably put Alan Crabb in the two spot and not really miss much. But if I have to trade Damian, now I've probably got to move CJ to point guard, which we know is not his natural position. And now LeBron's probably going to have to run point a lot more. Whereas if you've got Damian there, you can kind of ask LeBron to maybe do a little less and be fresh in the fourth quarter if you, heaven forbid, make it to the finals. So That would be my take on it, and I don't ever expect that to happen, but I am curious what he's going to do this offseason, because they need some extra help if they're going to beat Golden State next year, assuming Golden State gets back. But
for the record, if you have LeBron for the long term, I am fully on board having him a small forward for the next two seasons and a power forward for the rest of his career, because he has been very efficient as a power forward. The problem is that I don't know what Cleveland's mindset is going into a series against Golden State where they know they have to control the pace. And yet during, I don't know about game three, but during the first two games, they posted up LeBron James two times. He is a power forward in the right setting because he has the body of Karl Malone despite the court vision of Magic Johnson. And so if in this hypothetical world where he joins the Portland Trailblazers and you have to move CJ McCollum to point guard because you've gotten rid of Damian Lillard, I am fine with that because you can have LeBron James play the wing for the next year or two, and then you can camp his butt down in the paint, let him play some power forward slash point guard hybrid role,
right,
and create basically LeBron James 3.0, which is the final chapter of his career, which could be done. And you have him become this power forward figure that the league has never really seen, because he's now defaulting to a position where he's going to be great at the tail end of his career.
Yeah, I'd be excited to see that, and we'll definitely have to have a chat about that on the air the closer we get to the free agency period and definitely the draft. But we're past the 45-minute mark, so we got to sign off for the night. But, Bryant, can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been a pleasure talking sports with you, and especially finals talk. And we'll definitely have to have you on the show again soon with the draft and free agency right on the corner. And anytime you want to be on the show, we'll be happy to have you, pal.
Casey, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. If you haven't already, please follow him on Twitter. He's at Bryant Knox. He is a man of very rare sports vision. So please give him a follow and see what he has to say. And if you haven't already, please like this show on Facebook, on Twitter, and please follow Oregon Sports News. We're always happy to have supporters. And as always, please continue to throw your passion at the band Liebecker. They're three great guys from the great Northwest. Follow them at www.liebeckermusic.com. This has been Armchair Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. Thank you and have a great weekend.